Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Conference USA Report podcast. Big day, big week in Conference USA this week. Let's get right to it. I guess a programming note. We had planned to get Dave from Daily Dragon on, but unfortunately he could not make it. So it's not like we just booted him off. We tried to get him on. Didn't work out. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the Conference USA Report podcast is brought to you by Lee's Coffee and Tea, please. Especially if you're in home for in Hattiesburg for homecoming. Drive up to Laurel, get you some tea. If you mention Conference USA Report podcast, you get 15% off. Thanks, Lee's Coffee and Tea. It's a great place. Guy, he really knows his coffee. He'll talk my ear off about coffee all the time. And so I have to pawn them off on you people, you know, like, talk to these people. Here, I'll send them your way. Please, thanks. He's a good friend. Let's get right into it. Big game. Big stuff happened. And I don't know that anything was more huge than your Blazers of Birmingham getting a win over North Texas in not quite an epic contest, but a classic Conference USA kind of battle. Both teams showed their strength, right? You came in saying, all right, these teams are like evenly matched. North Texas is explosive offensively, maybe can't run the ball. And, you know, whether or not you can get to Mason Fine before he slices and dices you will be the key. UAB, powerful run attack, good defense. Whether you can throw before the defensive line crushes your soul will be the key, right? And whether you can make it a shootout and not a grind will be the key. Well, turns out both things happened. First half was clearly won by North Texas, 21-10. Second half was clearly won by UAB. What is that, 20-0, right? Is that about what it was? 19-0, right? Like I said, we'll talk through it a little bit. Mason Fine came out throwing the ball well. UAB came out. They got a couple sacks early, but they looked like they were going to have some trouble keeping up with them. So a little bit of that grinding run game. But the thing about grinding run games is that they pay off later on, right? You run an inside zone and you punish the linebackers in the first quarter so that way in the fourth quarter they don't make the tackle and you get the first down that seals the game, right? That's the idea. And that didn't quite happen that way. You know, because North Texas still had one last drive to try to win the game, because UAB couldn't punch it in for TD. But I think it was that final drive was something like 6 minutes or something like that. 6 minutes, went 87 yards, 13 plays, really took up all the time that they could take up and all but sealed the game is what I tweeted. You know, like that was as close as you can get to a game sealing drive without actually closing the door. So, you know, what happened? Did UAB just all of a sudden put the clamps on them in the second half? Well, yes, but then also, again, and here's part of what makes UAB really good, and, you know, this can backfire on you because it's really hard to catch up when you get down, as we saw when UAB played Coastal Carolina. But when you get ahead and you start grinding things out, you make it really difficult on explosive offenses to do anything. And I think if you watch the West Virginia game, against was Iowa State, same kind of deal. And that one, I think West Virginia's explosive offense was only on the field for like 55 plays or something like that. North Texas was a little bit more balanced in this one. A lot of that had to do with the first half. But second half, the offense only had the ball for 4 minutes in the third quarter. Once the fourth down conversion attempt failed early on the first drive, right, because North Texas received the ball in the second half early, UAB went on a three. It was basically 4 minutes. It's 3 minutes, 57 seconds. They went on a long drive, and that ended in a fumble. Nate Brooks, the cornerback from North Texas, forced a fumble at the 6-yard line. So North Texas backed up. Well, guess what? UAB's ferocious defensive line made an appearance, got the stop, forced the safety, gets the ball back, another 3-minute drive touchdown. That is the kind of thing that wins you games right there. And, you know, it was a nice little parallel with the North Texas situation earlier, right? Well, like later on. So UAB drives. UAB forces a fumble inside the 6 yard line. Same kind of situation, right? Mason Fine fumbles. There's some controversy. I think the refs stole a TD from UAB by blowing the whistle a little too early. All of that was a little confusing anyway, and I haven't seen any quotes from Seth Luttrell to see what he thinks about it, but I figure he'll just say they kind of didn't play well, they beat ourselves and that kind of thing. So there's a fumble by Mason Fine at the 6 yard line, right? North Texas is looking for a go ahead touchdown drive. And well, instead of getting crushed in the back of their end zone or punting the ball away, AJ Erdley fires a huge 36-yard pass to Xavier Ubosi, and that really kickstarts the drive. And this is what I'm saying. And then UAB gets first down, gets another first down. They face like a third and 10, and they got a huge run. It was not Brown on that one. I forget who it was. But it kept the drive going, really clinched things. Let me see. What was that drive there? Third and 9, timeout. It was Stanley Rich. 12 yards to the 16 on 3rd and 9. That's the kind of thing that wins you games. And North Texas, if you know, you're a North Texas fan listening to this, and you're like, what exactly happened here? How did we lose this one again? Is this the same old North Texas kind of thing? Yes and no. I mean, I think you like that North Texas jumped out to a 21-10 lead. It showed the quality that this team has. It showed the talent they have, right? Jalen Darden, 10 catches, 143 yards, 2 scores. He looked unstoppable. I think the question is what happened to him in the third quarter. And you look closer at the numbers and situation. As I just explained, 2 4-minute drives essentially took up much of that third quarter. I want to say that North Texas only had the ball 4 minutes all told, right? You had the first drive at the half, right? You're getting aggressive and you're going for it, right? Okay, that's cool. That's all defensible. But I want to say that was only 7 plays in 2 minutes. After that, you only get the 1 play, a sack. Probably a terrible play by Mason Fine. You got to get the ball out quick. You got to know that you got to get the ball out quick. Terrible play by the offensive line. What are you doing allowing a sack so quickly? And I know Garrett Marino is a beast, but you got to do a better job. And then offensive coordinator Graham Harrell, what are you doing calling that play in that situation? So I can understand the feelings there, but you only run 11 plays in that quarter, and then you don't execute well. You only get 3.4 yards per play in that quarter. You only possess the ball 4 minutes. That is a recipe for losing, right? There was another 3-and-out mixed in there. I think was that one? Oh, yeah. And again, look, you got to credit UAB's defensive line. They knew that, hey, we can't give Mason Fine too much time to sit around and throw these passes, because look what he did in the first half, right? Like, we got to get to him. We can't let him do this. North Texas got the ball after the touchdown to make it 21-19. North Texas got the ball. Quick pass to Kelvin Smith, 5 yards to the 30. And then 2 hurries right here. They're just written as hurries, right? Garrett Marino hurry, Chris Maul hurry. But they hit him, and they made him throw incomplete, right? Those are the kinds of plays that, you know, you don't know who to credit to. You're like, was that a great job by the secondary? Like, great job, secondary. You're not allowing a whole lot of passes here. Well, that's the defensive line right there. Yeah, they hit Mason Fine. They hurt him, and they got a punt. Got their offensive ball. Offense goes down, scores a touchdown, you know? Those quick 3-and-outs really help the offense, because you're wearing down the defense. And credit to the UAB offense. They didn't have an amazing day statistically, right? You know, it's not like 500-something yards. Only the 392. Didn't really light up the scoreboard, or at least the pass offense didn't light up the scoreboard. A.J. Erdley was solid, 14 of 22, 189 yards. He did take the 4 sacks. But they ran the ball when they needed to, and I think they lost the center, right? I think he's actually out for a couple weeks now. They ran the ball when they needed to. Spencer Brown, 25 carries, 100 yards, the 3 scores. I would say that it doesn't really matter where you run the ball elsewhere, right? I mean, it's real easy to get 9 yards in 3rd and 12. Can you get a first down on 3rd and short, 2nd and short, 4th and 1, goal line, red zone areas, right? And UAB was amazing doing that in the red zone. They're 5 of 6 scoring. They, you know, got the yards that they needed to get when they needed to get them. And this was a perfect conservative kind of game for them. You know, run the ball, play defense, run the ball, play defense. They let it get out of hand for them early in the first half, but they made up for it. A shutout in the second half. What can you say? An epic season for UAB. I think North Texas and Louisiana Tech fans, and really anybody that's played UAB, knows how good they've been. They recognize the talent they have there. And coming into the season, I saw this as a loss for North Texas. Anyway, in probably the same kind of fashion, I thought UAB has the run game and the defense to, you know, like the run game to keep the ball away from North Texas and the defense to stop North Texas when, you know, or to make it difficult and not allow them to just score wantonly. As it was, that kind of worked out. North Texas really has to figure out whether or not they really want to run the ball or just pass the ball. It seems like when they pass it, they're much better. And I know Seth Luttrell in particular really wants to run it. But 64 yards, they have talented backs, but those guys are just not, they're not Jeff Wilson. And it's not really a knock on them. But, I mean, what are you going to do in that situation? Southern Miss was trying to figure out what they're going to do about Ito Smith replacing him. And it seems like they just now found a guy, Travinsky Mosley, to be that dude. Ito Smith just tweeted, quote tweeted, and said, yeah, I like this guy. No, it's hard to find a talent like that. You got to figure out what kind of offense you want to be. It seems like North Texas tries to go all in passing the game. You can see everybody kind of complain, that the Twitter people saying, why are we trying to run the ball when we throw the ball so well? North Texas has to figure out what they want to be. They right now they're still a really good team, and you can see them in that first half. They look like they can beat anybody. In that second half, they look like they can lose to anybody, and that has been largely the case all season long. Some of that was covered up just by, you know, they're just better than other teams. But when you get against a good team like UAB or even Louisiana Tech, who had the same kind of playbook in the second quarter of the Tech game, North Texas had the ball for, you know, a couple minutes in that one. UAB and La Tech had the ball for something like 12 minutes in that one. So similar situation to the third quarter here. And if you go back to the North Texas SMU game, same kind of deal. The offense didn't play that well in the first half. Drop passes, you know, not really the explosive offense that you would expect. And I think that's reflected in the scores. You know, North Texas is not hitting 40. They're still in the 30s, high 20s, low 30s. Nothing like the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, that you saw last season. And, you know, what does that mean? Well, you knew there was going to be a change. You lose a guy like Jeff Wilson, it's a step back. And that's going to be true for a lot of teams. But again, let's give UAB the credit they deserve. Top of the division, all but sealing the division championship for them. I call this a championship game, and I know a lot of Louisiana Tech fans are giving me crap about that. Like, you can't call this the division championship game. It was. I mean, you look at the way Louisiana Tech played yesterday, and then even the week before against UTEP and UTSA. Not a whole lot to be overly excited about in those two games, and a lot of question marks across the board. Yes, 3-1, right? That means a whole lot. You're 3-1, just two slip ups away by UAB. But let me ask you this: which team looked likely to lose to a UTEP yesterday? UAB or Louisiana Tech, right? You know, Louisiana Tech was a Jalen Ferguson defensive drive, one-man drive, of sacking the third string UTEP quarterback from, you know, from allowing UTEP to tie the game. And then, what was it? There was that 4th-and-1, 42-yard touchdown. Like, you needed a fourth down conversion trick play to go ahead, right? Jamar Smith, and this is at home, homecoming. Yes, UTEP is getting better, and North Texas kind of struggled with them also, but in that one, North Texas really didn't look like they were ever kind of challenged, and in this one, this is a third-string quarterback out here for UTEP. I don't know. I'm not as high on Louisiana Tech as I was earlier this season. I'm not as high on Jamar Smith as I was earlier this season. And a lot of that has to do with the way Louisiana Tech's played this season. We'll see. UAB does have to take on UTEP at UTEP next week in a battle of two teams that kind of play the same way. They want to play defense. They want to run the ball. And you know what? They want to grind it all out. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if UTEP jumps up and bites somebody. I thought the team that was going to be the annoying kind of team like that was going to be Rice with a grounded out run game, a smart coach, that kind of thing. But they kind of petered out, and UTEP is just really starting to hit their stride right now. I think long term, Rice is probably the better gig. It's just so hard to recruit guys out there to UTEP. But I mean, hey, they've gotten talent, right? They've got NFL talent out there to UTEP. Like in the last 5 years in the Coogler era, right? He had talent, NFL talent. Aaron Jones, Will Hernandez, right? The lineman. Rice gets talent out there too. I mean, it is Houston. It's a great school. It's a great situation. It just seems like it's easier to do that than it would be out in UTEP. I mean, that's just me, right? What do I know? UAB travels to UTEP. They can even absorb a loss because they have the tiebreaker against Louisiana Tech. Travel to UTEP, then home against UTSA, home against Southern Miss, who has an offense. They're like North Texas Light. They can score, they can run, but they're having trouble running the ball, but now they're getting Trevinsky Mosley out there running the ball all over the place. They're good. Jack Abraham throws a little too many interceptions. That's one thing that Mason Fine doesn't do. Mason Fine, 29-40, 336 yards, 3 touchdowns. Jack Abraham threw a pick 6. And yeah, it was kind of tipped at the line, but I mean, still. Then you got the Texas A&M game, right, at Texas A&M. That might be good. It just might be just a chance to get on the map. And maybe really make up for that Coastal Carolina loss, because then everybody brings that up. I bring it up. And then finally, at Middle Tennessee. I mean, in a game, yeah, Middle Tennessee's 3-1 in the conference, but they're nowhere near the team. They're not playing nearly as well as UAB is at this point. You're not really scared of Middle Tennessee's defense in the way that you just look at this UAB defensive line and know that they're going to give you problems. You know that they're going to sack you a couple times. 4 sacks for UAB in this game, by the way. Middle is, you know, they kind of escaped from Charlotte, even though the score looks a little one-sided there. 21-13, I think Charlotte got a late one. You're like, they kind of handled them, right? No, they didn't. Charlotte had a 6-0 lead for a while, and it looked like Charlotte was controlling the game. 2 quick touchdowns to Ty Lee from Brent Stockstill. Put them ahead, and then Charlotte kind of, they remembered they were Charlotte, I guess. And, you know, that kind of petered out. Middle still controls a lot of their fate. They just need FIU to lose 2 games. You know, that's the sucky thing about, you know, head-to-head. Marshall. Hey, Marshall had a great game. Great day for Marshall eliminating FAU. Both participants in last year's conference championship game are all but eliminated. Like, North Texas needs, you know, UAB to drop all those games I just mentioned. Like, all of them. That's what they need. FIU doesn't have as solid of a lead on their division as UAB does, but they're on their way. And 3-0 in conference play. Are they 2-0 in the division? Yeah. Need more division games and really seal it up. Next week, what do you got next week? FIU at Western Kentucky. You know, Western Kentucky is the worst team by win loss record in the division. And actually, let's talk about that game, because Western Kentucky and Old Dominion played a classic in a strange time to play a classic. Late in the season, 2 of the worst teams in the nation, statistically speaking, played a classic. It had a classic ending, but true to terrible team form, it required a lot of bad plays, penalties, and questionable decisions. Let's talk to Ed Miller, the Virginian Pilot, who was there, and he's going to tell us all about it. All right, so Ed, just tell us what happened in that ridiculous ending.
Yeah, Adam, we all knew this was going to be the game of the week, you know. low-level drama in Bowling Green in front of, you know, a couple thousand people on a really chilly, icy night with a fierce wind blowing. you know, it looked like it was heading to overtime three different times. And I almost tweeted we're heading to overtime, but I resisted the urge. And it was a good thing because, you know, ODU scored to tie the game with, I think it was 9 seconds left. If I'm checking my sheet here. Yeah, they scored 9 seconds left. They moved 79 yards in 8 plays to tie it up at 34. So good for them. Overtime. Western got the ball, ran a couple plays, including a pass play that fell incomplete with 2 seconds left, and basically the time had run out. But not so fast, my friend. ODU was called for roughing the passer. So moved the ball up 15 yards, and here comes Western out to try a 57-yard field goal, which, you know, admittedly, is a long field goal. But the wind was really blowing at the kicker's back, Alex Ranella. He left it well short. It fluttered and died. And, you know, okay, we're going to overtime. But, again, not so fast. ODU had 12 men on the field. So let's move it up 5 yards, try a 52-yarder. In this case, ODU had stationed Isaiah Harper, their dynamic kick returner, back in the end zone for a play they call special. They practice it every Friday. It's the same play that Auburn beat Alabama with about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And anyway, Harper gets to the ball and barrels upfield. You know, he's going deeper and deeper. He gets to about the 20, to the 17, and he's you know, pushed out of bounds. And so you think, okay, this time it's really, you know, we're really heading to overtime. But again, there's flag on the field this time. This one's on Western for a face mask. And so basically the bottom line is we're going halfway the distance to the goal on another untimed play. So Nick Rice comes in, kicks a 26-yard field goal, game over. ODU wins 37-34. So, yeah, truly one of the more bizarre endings. Wish I had a better word for that, but than bizarre, but, you know, surreal. I don't know how to describe it, but really crazy ending. So ODU doesn't win very often, but when they do, they tend to make, you know, make news.
Yeah, they make it memorable.
Virginia Tech or this win over Western Kentucky.
I mean, so I think this is the kind of thing like that kind of shows like the quality that Old Dominion has, and they're clearly in just like spoiler mode now, right? I mean, 1-4 in the conference, just above Western Kentucky. You know, what do you make of their chances the rest of the way? You know, because what is it, Middle Tennessee next week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I was writing just now in a follow up story that's going to run tomorrow. You know, they've got a sliver of a chance, but, you know, that's all they had Saturday night. One thing about this team is, you know, it's a cliche, I know, but they really don't quit. I mean, they play until the end, and in this case, you know, it really paid off. So they don't look at themselves as spoilers, believe it or not. They think, you know, hey, we got to win out to finish 6-6, go to a bowl. Again, you know, I wouldn't want to take wouldn't put much money on that, but you never know. I mean, they got 3 at home, which is certainly, you know, important, with Middle, North Texas, and then VMI, who's a pretty woebegone FCS team that they should beat handily. And then they go to Rice, you know, to finish the season. So it's possible. I don't think it'll happen, but, you know, especially with this team, you just never know from 1 week to the next what you're going to see. But, you know, this was a nice moment for them. Certainly, you know, they stormed the field. It's been a while since that Virginia Tech win, and, you know, they needed something good to happen. And so, you know, good for them. I don't know what it'll mean in the big picture, but it'll go down in program lore just for the way it ended.
Yeah, that's I don't know if I could take, if I were an Old Dominion fan, if I could take this. It's like, let's have a miracle win, biggest upset ever, and also let's have a ridiculous ending in what's, like you said, seemingly a kind of forgotten game on the Conference USA slate in October. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this really was a kind of joke. I mean, they had a basketball scrimmage before the game, and from talking to some of the people who cover the team regularly here at Western, they were saying, you know, there were, yeah, there was certainly, you know, not more people in raw terms, but because, yeah, you know, Diddle Arena is not as big, but certainly, you know, basketball season is what people are looking forward to here after Western's disappointing start. And, you know, with OU off to the start they were, I mean, it's no surprise that not many people showed up. It was cold. The temperature probably dropped. It felt like it dropped like 20 degrees from the kick. The wind was really howling. And it was very cold and kind of nasty conditions. But, yeah, just, you know, strange. One of the stranger things I've seen. But, you know, Old Dominion somehow got it done. Their defense, which is much maligned, for a good reason, I would add. They did better in the second half. You know, they held Western scored 24 in the first half. They had three up until their final drive when they just moved right down the field, you know, just with little resistance to go up 34-27. They went 80 yards, 10 plays. So it just seemed like typical Old Dominion, you know, can't stop anybody in the fourth quarter when it counts. And, again, they really didn't. But their offense responded with that drive to tie it up, and then the series of mishaps, which actually worked out in their favor. I mean, how often are you going to be penalized twice, you know, for a roughing call and then a 12 men on the field, you know, kind of silly plays, and it ends up extending the game, and you end up winning. So, you know, sometimes you can succeed by failing, I guess. I mean, that seems like the formula ODU had in this game.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the Western kicker there, but I think when he missed short from 57, I thought that was maybe a strange decision to kick from 52. What was it like, the feeling in the press box there?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get into Sanford's press conference because basically you've got to go to one or the other.
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything regarding that decision, you know, reflected on the transcript of the quotes I received. But, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, do you just throw the Hail Mary there? You know, Wilder thought that there was a pretty good chance the kick was going to come up short, even though there was a tailwind. I think the kid had hit a 41-yarder in the game. Wait, he hit one from 33. Yeah, and 41 in the game. So, you know, apparently from what I've heard, you know, he's got that kind of leg, but, you know, that's the flip side of those things is it can come back on you. You know, you can get a field goal returned, whereas, you know, you're probably not going to get a 100-yard interception return on a Hail Mary. The ball is just going to be batted down. But, yeah, really tough loss for Western. I know Sanford thought that Harper had stepped out of bounds before that play occurred. You know, I haven't had a chance to see that. I think he'll bring that up with Conference USA officials. I'll be curious to see what they say about that. He felt Harper stepped out of bounds well before the face mask penalty.
I think he's going to have to get in line. I think there's a lot of fans with a lot of complaints, a lot of coaches, a lot of complaints this week, especially.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, he's been on the wrong side of a couple of these. You know, in East Carolina, they had a couple of calls that went their way. The CUSA basically said, yeah, we blew it. Mm-hmm. You know, you could say that cost them the game. I don't know. There's any one play that cost you. And they had their chances down at East Carolina. But so, you know, their players were kind of like, hey, we finally got one to go our way, you know, even though it couldn't have been the way anyone drew it up. But, you know, it's good win for them. They had never beaten Western, kind of a sidebar to the game, in four tries. And, you know, as Bobby would say, Western's been one of the top programs in the league, which is true, you know, but last couple of years, not so much. But still, they'll take it. They're not in a position to look askance at any win at this point.
And, I mean, you know, I kind of forgot that you can go 6-6 here if they win out. But, you know, like, I think they're far behind FIU in the conference standings, but you know, they can still affect things, right? Yeah, as you said, Middle at home, and Middle, for as good as they are with Brent Stockstill, you know, you never know what can happen. And I think what stands out to me is that Old Dominion scored what, 20 at Marshall, or two, you know, home against Marshall, and yeah. Marshall held FAU to 7, right? I mean, you know, like,
Old Dominion's offense has been pretty good of late. I mean, since the La Russa switch, I mean, it kind of clicked something, and you know, they've got Fulgham and Duhart on the edges, as everybody knows. But last night they had a 100-yard rusher, Keyshawn Strong. I'm looking at the stat, he had 27 carries for 125. So a lot of carries, you know, decent average of 4.6 yards. So, you know, that's something they've been looking for. Jeremy Cox is still out with an ankle injury. So the guys they have behind him are true freshmen, Lala Davis and Will Knight. So anytime an ODU back can get 100 yards, you know, they're going to have a parade. It just hasn't happened much in the last couple years. So, yeah, the offense has been okay. La Russa continues to, you know, to do some things. I mean, he hangs in there. He when he gets time, he's pretty accurate. He was 21 for 32 last night. Fulgham had 7 catches. Duhart had 5. So, you know, they can do some things, and they can score some points. The question, again, is still the defense. I mean, for all, you know, as good as everybody at Old Dominion feels about this win, they still gave up 464 yards and 34 points to a, you know, I think it's fair to say a pretty pretty woebegone offense there, mm-hmm. Western Kentucky, yeah. That was averaging 17.8 per game. And, you know, I think that was a season high for the Hilltoppers. I don't have their stuff in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that they had not scored 34. So, considering the opponent, you know, the defense, again, has got a lot of work to do. And Brent Stock still is, you know, is pretty good. So we'll see. But, you know, they're in it. They've got something to play for. So it's homecoming this week. So they'll give fans an excuse to come out.
All right, Ed, we'll let you go. Stay warm over there in Bowling Green. And you say you're catching a flight out. Thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always, Ed. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Ed, friend of the show. Well, I want to make fun of Dave here. Ed calls into the show when it's time to call into the show, and Dave didn't. Always good to talk to Ed. He's fun. It's so ridiculous that Old Dominion plays. They only win classic games, right? Only win games that are very gif-able. Only win games that you put on a poster or something like that. But yeah, as it stands, Old Dominion 1-4 in the conference, 2-6 on the season. As Ed said, you know, you kind of have to win out to get bowl eligible, and that's maybe possible. You know, if you play like the Old Dominion that beat Virginia Tech, that almost beat East Carolina, and that won this game, right? The defense can't stop anybody right now. But you look at Middle Tennessee, and you say, you know, is that a beatable team? Yes. Yes, it is a beatable team because on their day, Middle Tennessee's good, but they did need, you know, comebacks, desperation comebacks against Florida Atlantic and against Marshall to win those games. You got to, and then, you know, you lose the FIU in a game that you're ahead, but you lose Brent Stockstill. Stockstill doesn't play so well against Charlotte. You really go as Stockstill goes, and that's a problem. You need more rushing. You need more production from the rushing game. I don't know. If you have to get in a shootout, I like having Brent Stock still with me because I think that guy can make plays. But, you know, if he plays like he did against Charlotte, then, you know, are you going to score touchdowns in that one with Old Dominion? I don't know. I can easily see Old Dominion giving them a run. And, hey, same thing with North Texas. North Texas travels to Hampton Roads. And, you know, on paper, North Texas is a better team, right? Even, you know, talent for talent, offense versus defense, they match up well. I think North Texas could score in a shootout with them. But as we saw North Texas against all the teams I mentioned earlier, UTEP, Louisiana Tech, UAB, Southern Miss, there are portions of each of those games where they didn't look so great. And, you know, I can see them losing the shootout there. These two teams, Old Dominion and North Texas, played a classic last season in Denton where it took 3 fourth-and-1 stops to for North Texas to get out and win the game. Old Dominion led the game late late in the second half or early in the second half? I forget which. But then you got VMI and Rice. All winnable games, if not easy games. They're not easy, but they're winnable if you play at the level that is their best. And that might be the whole issue, right? They got to play, you know, at nearly 100% of their potential offensively to win these games. And you'd like to be able to play somewhere like 70, 80% and have the ability to turn it up. Okay, that's enough Old Dominion talk. Western Kentucky, what are you doing? You scored a lot of points. And I was going to mention you know, that 34 points doubled their output. They're at 65 points. They're the lowest scoring East Division team right now. And they haven't scored as many as UTEP. UTEP's also played three games in this conference. 69 points for UTEP, 65 for Western Kentucky. And yeah, you're like, oh, we had a chance. We're just a couple plays away. I think that's what Bobby Walter said in the pregame stuff. So you look at his team, they were just a couple of possessions away from getting some wins. But yes and no. I mean, one, they put themselves in bad positions, and I didn't really think they were going to come back and win those games. Again, and some of this is comparing Western Kentucky to what they would have been, you know, what they should have been or what they were in the past. 0-3, not good. What was the deal with that kick? I don't know why you kick it twice. Can he kick 57 yards? I don't know. That just a lot of questionable decisions there late down the stretch. You can't like that you allowed a game tying touchdown. You can't like that you didn't get into overtime where you probably could have won it. You know, ground out a victory at home. But that's the state of Western Kentucky football at this point in time. Let's talk about this Marshall game. The great Doug Smock covered this game for Conference USA Report. 31-7, kind of a dominating win as far as this goes. A lot of that was self-caused, right? As Doug noted in his game story, 4 interceptions from Chris Robinson. Owls committed 8 penalties, and 3 of the 4 fourth down conversion attempts failed. Right, and then there was the one at the 13-yard line, the one that everybody was complaining about. As it was, I don't really think that's a terrible decision, but it's not the greatest decision. I know Lane Kiffin saying, yeah, the advanced numbers say, you know, by the book, it's good. If 4th and 2, don't do it. 4th and 1, you do it. But they also say that field position is a big deal, and you don't want to give the ball away at the 13. Like, going for it in 4th and 1, anywhere on the field, you have a good chance of doing it, but the risks of doing it at your own 13 are higher than if you do it on the opponent's 13, you know? Whatever. They didn't get it, but that's not really what lost them the game. It just kind of put them out of the game for good. You know, I think a lot of their problems stem from the fact that Chris Robinson's turning the ball over. We saw a little bit of this with Alec Thompson a couple weeks ago. He couldn't get the ball to Tyree Brady because he was rusty. And that not necessarily cost them a game, but it did make it easier for Middle Tennessee to come back and just kind of dominate. You need to have options. And I don't think he's giving them that option the same way that Driscoll did. When Driscoll turned it on last season, that's what sparked the 10-0 run, right? They were 3-3. He kind of turned it on. He won a lot of games for them just by being dynamic, being able to run the ball, and then finding enough in the pass game. I think he threw for a lot of yards in the North Texas game. Is that 3-something, right? Robinson, you can see that he has talent, right? He has arm talent. I think he broke that record. He set the program record for pass yards earlier in the season. He's making too many mistakes right now, but that's what happens when you have a young quarterback, you know? So you take the good with the bad. But I heard Frank Wilson, head coach of UTSA, say this earlier this week, like, you know, these are not pros, right? You're trying to develop them. They're kids. And, you know, you can't dwell on all the mistakes all the time. You're trying to get them better every week. And there's a lot to that. Yeah, they're not professionals, you know, even though they're kind of quasi-professionals. Maybe they should be professionals. Maybe you should pay them. But they're not. And they're young, and they're going to make mistakes. And especially a redshirt freshman quarterback, as talented as he is, he's going to make mistakes. Mason Fine, right, you know, reigning Conference USA Player of the Year. Now he's only thrown 1 interception on the season. Last 2 seasons, he threw a lot. He threw like 15 last year, and then he threw 5 against only 6 touchdowns his freshman season. That, it just happens, right? You make mistakes. You learn from your mistakes. Unfortunately, I think that's what largely is costing FAU their season right now. 1-2 on the year. 3-4 overall. And, you know, they're all but eliminated right now. And I think you can kind of figure out a scenario where FIU and Marshall and Middle kind of lose enough and Florida Atlantic, you know, gets a tiebreaker someplace, but it's done. It's pretty much done. Next week, La Tech FAU. That was a game that could have mattered if FAU would have won this game, but right now it's La Tech traveling to FAU. In a game, I don't know that Louisiana Tech wins this game. I mean, FAU plays better at home. I think they're 3-0 at home. Is that right? I'm going to look at this. 1-0 in conference play, 3-0 at home. 0-4 on the road. So they're just a different team at home, and that's often what you get when you have a young quarterback, right? Just play better at home. So, you know, early on, I'm leaning towards La Tech. That's on CBS Sports Network, by the way. Southern Miss at Charlotte, and that's a game that Southern Miss should win. And, hey, look out now. Southern Miss, they have a nice little road to the division championship. I know I'm very high on UAB. I think in a matchup, when they play in a couple weeks, UAB will sack Jack Abraham a bunch, and they will grind down that Southern Miss defense and win the game. You know. But right now, hey, all it takes is one game, right? And if Southern Miss were to beat UAB, then you have a whole different scenario. They would have the advantage. The problem is that it's at Legion Field. Depending on what happens here, guys, UAB could host the game at Legion Field, and it's scheduled to be same day as the SWAC championship game. I reached out to the league. They haven't got back to me because, I tell you the truth, I don't know that they know what they want to do with this thing. They don't know what to say. We'll see. And I think they have plausible kind of just reason to ignore me right now, just because, you know, it hasn't officially happened just yet. There's a lot of game to play, a lot of season to play. So we'll see what's up, right? As it gets closer, that's certainly something that will be more of an issue, and they got to figure it out. A couple more things on this game. Looking at the notes from Doug Smock's game story here, I forgot that Tyler King went out with like a leg injury. I think it was. That's tough. You really, I don't know. Crazy thing about Marshall this season is that they've been able to run the ball like ridiculously well, and a lot of that is on Tyler King. He's just so good. He's so fast. You can get when he has the ball, he explodes with it. You know, all these guys are fast. All these guys are amazing athletes, but you see some next level dudes, right? That look like they just fly across the screen or slide across the screen, and that's what Tyler King does. And that's a large part of the reason why he's been so good. But I think they get Keon Davis back. I mean, obviously this is not a great situation if he's hurt, he's out for the year. Changes a lot of things for them. But I guess it's good that they have some depth behind them, and they have a nice stable of running backs back there. Marshall, again, 3-1 on the season. And if things fall right for them, you know, it's all good. They have a chance. My question about them, and why I was not so high on them to start the season, was that they didn't really have the greatest offense, right? I was like, okay, your QB is gone. Your senior QB is going to try his hand at the NFL. Okay, that's cool. Where are you going to score? Is Isaiah Green the dude? You got the grad transfer, Alex Thompson out here, and that's great, cool. He hasn't played in a while. Is he good enough? And he looked rusty earlier, and they lost to Middle, right? So you look at the rest of the schedule, and it's okay, right? You get a bye week next week. Allow some guys to heal. Southern Miss, Charlotte, UTSA, FIU, all winnable games. I think Marshall can win all of those games. And then it basically comes down to the final game against FIU. And I guess the issue is that it's on the road. Right, FIU is good at home. James Morgan's playing really well. FIU handled Rice 36-17. I said that was a game they can kind of pick their score. Rice played a little bit better. They're getting, I guess they're improving again after like 4 weeks where they're just awful. And FIU gets a win there, continuing just to tighten their grip on this division. So again, I was complaining about Marshall. I was like, yeah, they're not scoring enough. But you look at the scoring points in the division only, right, or in the conference only. 117 points for Marshall, right, in four games. 135 for Old Dominion, in five games. FIU only 88 in the three games, right? So even if FIU were to score, you know, another 20, 30 points, it's still below Marshall. Marshall's still there. They're still scoring enough. 204 points on the season, right? In seven games to FIU's 251. Still there. And I think it was at 159 allowed, 160 allowed by FIU. This could come down to that game, Marshall, FIU, and that would be fun. That would be a nice little division, like a play-in game for the championship game. And, I think that's good for Marshall. They're one of the league's better programs, and they have been for a while, right? Even when they had one down year, but even last year they were good, and they played FAU the best. It was just a question of turn the ball over and quarterback play. Hey, it looks like they decide, you know, we're not going to run the ball, pass the ball all over the field, Rakeem Cato style. We're just going to run the ball all the time, all day, and nobody's going to stop us. They do more of a spread to run than like this power grinded out UAB or even UTEP style. And that's kind of hit or miss, you know, sometimes because if you have to spread them and give them a credible threat spreading them. And that's what shut them down against Middle Tennessee. So as long as Alex Thompson is playing well enough, then they should be okay. Because that defense is good. They're back to being that Marshall defense. And I guess, that shouldn't be surprising considering Doc Holliday was a former linebacker and he believes in defense. You know, he's not the funnest guy. Is he, like, more unfun than Nick Saban? Is he? Is that what you guys think? Whatever the case, hey, he has a winning program right now. 3-1 on the season in the division, 4-3 overall. The East, are they worse than the West? I feel like they are. I feel like just team for team, there are more complete teams in the West than there are in the East. It's just like FIU, they're good, and I don't want to sleep on them, but I feel like they can be beat, right? Middle Tennessee had them down. They had them beat on the road. I think Marshall is good on defense, but maybe not in the pass game, and that can, as I just explained, that can come back to haunt them. Charlotte, not that good. FAU, turnover prone. Old Dominion, no defense, and, they're way behind it. Western Kentucky, awful. UAB, solid. Dominating defense, defensive line, good solid linebackers, good secondary, good enough quarterback, senior quarterback, and powerful run game that can grind the clock out. If you get ahead of them, then you can, obviously, if you get in a shootout with them, you probably feel good about yourself, but you're probably not going to get in a shootout, as we saw last game, North Texas, right? Louisiana Tech, they are good, right? They have. Just a one-man wrecking crew in Jalen Ferguson, and he can win a game for them. They have enough on offense, but, I mean, sometimes they just disappear there, right? Like, it's really just hitting home runs. They don't really have anybody get on base when they hit home runs. If that makes sense in a terrible analogy there. They just don't move the ball well enough as often. They really just rely on Adrian Hardy to make an incredible play, and he did again. He made an incredible touchdown catch, one-handed grab. You're relying on Jaquizz Dancy to just take one to the house or something. I just don't trust that offense enough to win a game for me. Southern Miss, they are young. The defense is good, but, they got sliced up by North Texas, right? If you come up against an offense that can beat you, they're not really going to slow them down too much. Jack Abraham is good, and he has weapons outside. But the run game was questionable until Travinsky Mosley just, went off yesterday. So maybe that's solved. If they have the balanced attack and Jack Abraham can stop throwing interceptions, they are somebody to look out for. I still think they're a little too young as a program there to really take the next step. But you never know, right? North Texas, they're pretty much done, at least in the West Division race. Same thing, amazing pass game. But questionable run game, and a lot of that has to do with the offensive line. The offensive line has improved, but when it comes down to can you block against a really good defensive line, and we've seen this against Troy. We've seen it against Louisiana Tech. We've seen it against FAU last season. And the answer is no. No, they can't. And if you want to go further back against Southern Methodist when they had some really good players there. And even Rice last season. I think Rice had 4 sacks against them. The question of whether you can sack Mason Fine is yes. Yes, you can get to Mason Fine enough times that you can disrupt the offense and give yourself a chance. UTSA, no offense to speak of, pretty much. They got a touchdown yesterday. UTSA had 17, right? But they had a touchdown yesterday because of defensive return. And again, Jack Abraham threw an interception. And they have a freshman quarterback. You can't really rely on a freshman quarterback. He did some nice things. Is it JoJo Weeks? He did some nice things, but you know, you can't rely on a freshman quarterback. UTEP getting better, but there's clearly problems, right? I was at Brandon Jones came in. He led the team to some good things. He made some nice runs. He looked rusty though. He missed some easy throws. He did lead him to a couple touchdowns. But I mean, what are you going to do? Your third string quarterback, you can only do so much. If Ryan Metz is out, and he might be, he had a concussion, I mean, do you go with Brandon Jones? You go back with Kyle Loxley? Loxley, as much as Dana Dimmel defended his passing ability, he's not quite the passer that Ryan Metz is. Ryan Metz is also a senior. You know, you kind of seen it and done it. Loxley gives you an added dimension. Brandon Jones, you know, he can run, but I don't know how well he can throw the ball, if he can do enough to keep the teams honest. But, I mean, UTEP, they're improving. They're fighting hard, and they have a talented defense. They got 2 senior corners that are really good. Was it Nick Needham and I forget the other guy. Is it Brady? Somebody named Brady? Rice played better, but there's a long way to go. They got to figure out the quarterback situation. The run game is not as explosive as it had been. But I mean, just overall, that's every team, right? We just described every team here. I think, you know, I think this is going to come down to UAB and like a Marshall. I like FIU, but I think Marshall's playing the best right now. If I had to pick a favorite out east, I'd pick Marshall. UAB and Marshall, could we see that, guys? Would y'all be down for a UAB versus Marshall in Birmingham, circa December? That should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I think Conference USA, even though it's been bad, it has been entertaining. And that's really what we're here for, right? We want to be entertained. Some good teams, some drama. I think like 5 games came down to the wire this season, you know, which gives you a little hint at the parity, you know, but that's also just college football. Let's talk a little bit, you know, as we close the show, a word about the broadcast deal. I know a lot of people were complaining about the beaten sports situation. And, you know, I kind of forget how many fan bases haven't seen all the different broadcast options. Cause I think, like North Texas has been on beIN Sport like 3-4 weeks already. And haven't been too much on ESPN Plus. And I saw UTSA fans say like, well, this is our first ESPN Plus game of the year. And I, you know, I hadn't realized that cause I've seen, you know, like, the rest of the conference has been on ESPN Plus already, right? I think overall the conference has an improved broadcast deal. That's my point. But there are weaknesses. And beIN Sport is not on everything that you can see. It is on Fubo TV, and I did a lot of tweeting about it. That, you know, if I'm like, hey, man, I need to get me a commission on this thing. Fubo has a good stream. I don't actually have it because I got Spectrum, and Spectrum has beIN, so I just use that. But Fubo TV, on all their packages, they have beIN Sport. Good stream. Everybody liked it from everything I can tell. It was good quality. It's a little delayed, but that's what you're going to get with internet streaming. I like ESPN Plus a lot more than I even like ESPN 3. On Plus, you can rewind. You know, it's a good quality stream. It's ESPN quality. You know, I think they bought the rights to the MLB Advanced Media thing, or I forget how that situation works out, but they have really good technology backing their stuff. It's loads better than Conference USA TV. And for the most part, it's a better situation, with the actual broadcasts than like ESPN 3 was, or even definitely Conference USA TV. Because I think those are just like students out there filming it. And now, while I can remember way back when, you know, like the Sun Belt, when a lot of these teams were in the Sun Belt, like North Texas, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, when those teams were in the Sun Belt and those games were awful, yeah, you're lucky to even get a stream. So, you know, yeah, I'm a little bit like, hey, I'm just kind of thankful for what that it's on TV. But I know a lot of longtime Conference USA fans, or like maybe you're, some of these teams are from the WAC, right? You had some better options, and a lot of this is disappointing. I think the truth is, and the fact remains, that this conference is not going to get the greatest TV deal. It's not going to be able to call up and say, you know, let's get a Conference USA network, and we're going to put that on all the broadcasters. It's just not going to happen. Best we can hope for right now, I think, is this split deal with CBS Sports Network being the linear television provider, and with an ESPN Plus being the rest. Right now, ESPN, their first choice is SEC. Then you're going to go like Big 12, then Pac 12, all the way down the line, right? Big 10 in there. You're not really going to spend a whole lot of time on regular ESPN to watch, you know, Florida Atlantic and Louisiana Tech play. It's just not going to happen. So we're going to get the second, third tier. And it's not, a lot of people are like, well, you know, you got to write in some protections for BN Sports to be on. I mean, look, when Conference USA signed the BN Sports deal, it was a good deal. BN Sport was one of the only channels, the only networks to be interested in what they're selling. They got it. They do a solid broadcast. You got a pregame show. You got a postgame show. You got a halftime show. They talk about Conference USA. Jeremy St. Louis does a great job. He goes to the media days. You know, they do a good job there. I think, you know, Stadium does a decent job too, but I think BN Sport is quality. They, you know, they have experience doing international things. They were trying to get their feet wet into college football. I don't think they were expecting to be dropped from, what is it? Did they get dropped from Sling TV? To be dropped from View, PlayStation View, to be dropped from all these other things. And I think a lot of that has to do with their economics. They didn't really expect any of this. I think they're going to lose their La Liga television deal. And, I mean, they already lost the Italian league rights, right? So those went to ESPN Plus, and that really cut into them. Because now a lot of people are like, well, I'm not gonna watch that. Right now their big draw is the Spanish league, which is a good league if you watch soccer. But that's not going to get everybody subscribing. And at the time, again, when the deal was signed, BN Sport was on a lot more networks. It was provided a lot of different places. And so it was a reasonable deal. As it stands now, I can't see Conference USA saying this is a great partnership. But, I mean, even from BN Sports perspective, I think the ratings last season were like zero. I think literally like zero people watched a couple of the games, like Charlotte and FAU or something like that, Charlotte, FIU, late in the season. And, I mean, there's not much to say about it. It was a good effort. It was a good try. And I don't think you're thinking that far ahead. Like, what if you get dropped at the point in time when you're signing the deal and you're just looking for somebody, taking the best you can get? The conference wasn't in the best bargaining position at the time. Now that's, I think CBS Sports is an okay deal. I don't like all the Facebook broadcasts. Generally speaking, I don't really like all the internet streams all the time. It's not really the greatest way to build up a community around these games. You know, you like a big watching party. Internet streams can kind of get iffy at times, but this is the best you're going to get. And if it's ESPN Plus or like the next few generations of it, that is solid. You know, you get a chance to watch your favorite team. I think the best case scenarios would be for, you know, like an FAU or even a North Texas again, or, you know, looking at next season. I don't know who's going to be coming out next season that you can probably think would be the best for this team. Maybe a Marshall or something like that. You're looking at a team that can make some national noise, then they'll be on like national TV, right? That's what you need, right? I think BN Sport ends their deal after this season, and we'll see what happens. I don't know who pays money for Conference USA football for the inventory that's there. Again, it's not like the league is going to be in an even greater bargaining position. The ratings were not super great for those games that BN Sport carried, and I don't know that they're going to get particularly better, right? So who's going to buy them? It's probably just going to get absorbed by ESPN Plus, and we'll have more games that way. Again, wouldn't be a bad thing, but you're not just going to get anything better than beIN Sports right now. It's not going to be another linear TV provider. And I was going to say, I don't know what you guys think of Stadium. Watch the Facebook Watch Live, whatever it's called. It's okay. It kind of has the same problems. It's cool. You have to find an internet stream. If you're complaining about having to figure out and having like a lookup chart, you know, to figure out what you're going to watch and how you're going to get to it and what the stream and what the URL is, that's just really the future of TV, isn't it? I mean, you're going to have to figure out ESPN Plus, find a stream. That's just all of it. And I know somebody was complaining about having different accounts and a lot of different things. That's the way they want to push it. I mean, Disney wants to split out all their deal, all their content from Netflix. And so if you want to watch, you know, Beauty and the Beast or something like that with your kids or something, you're going to have to pay $10 a month to do that. You're going to have a Hulu, a Netflix, HBO Go subscription if you want to do it. This is the great thing about a la carte, is that you get to choose what you want. You can figure out your own bundle, is that you have all that choice. But the bad thing is that you're going to have 15 different accounts, right? That's the way it's the trade-off. That's the way it's going to be. I think we just all need to get used to it. Although we can hope for better. I mean, you always just switch teams and just root for like Alabama. They're on TV every week, I guess. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the Conference USA Report podcast. If you want to get in touch with the show, podcast@conferenceusareport.com. That's CUSAreport.com. Thanks again to Ed Miller for jumping on the show. Thanks to you people who listened to the preview episode this week. Thanks for Dave jumping on that one. If you're looking at the stream, like, why are there two this week? For the bigger games, we're going to try to get people on here and do a little preview episode because they're big and they're worth talking about. This was a huge game. It was fun. It was entertaining. And I, for one, we had a little watch party here. It was a good time. Everybody had a good time. Had chips and dip, right? Kids were running around, living and dying on every play. That's what college football is supposed to be about. That's the fun of it. And so I hope you have fun, too. Hope you have fun this week. Even watching that Old Dominion, Western Kentucky game. Basketball season just around the corner, and I, for one, am excited about what Conference USA has in store in that one. Should be good times, y'all. Thanks again for listening. See you next week.